goodness.
Wow. Point of light. Oh, my word. Oh, yes. Let me get in the game here. Wow, that was so wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice. I'm very happy to be here. I would have hated to have missed that. What happens when voices come together and know how to harmonize like that? Can you feel that move through you, you know, when you can hear the perfect? That is everything I am talking about today. So thank you. Not only that, but you, one of your lyrics in there is right out of my talk. So we're on. We got this. We totally got this. So good morning. I'm really, I'm still a little high about coming back after my unexpected sabbatical, and it's just so good to be here. And I had the time of my life last night. Thank you, Cheryl Copper, because man, that was your baby. We had our first annual practitioner folly, or follies, I guess it has to be. And the practitioners, I want to, okay, stand up if you're a licensed practitioner and you're here today. Stand up so we can acknowledge you. That was extraordinary. You did your minister's heart glad. She's really feeling happy about all of that. Thank you so much. You know, what was unique about that experience last night, and if you didn't come, we'll do it again in a year. You don't want to miss it. It was really fun, and they didn't charge anything. They fed us, and it was a gift to us, so thank you for that, and your chili was outstanding. Want that recipe, Mark. Want that recipe. What happened last night was, because I am just returning to leadership here, not that I ever left that, but you know, now that I'm really back and excited about it, I had no say or no knowledge or nothing about that program last night. So I walked in the room and I could see that all the practitioners were at a certain level of energy that I was not at. And it was so strange, because usually if I was here, I probably would have been running the whole thing. And I want you to know how lovely and how validating it was to me that I could step away for 6 weeks and know that this church, this community, is holding its own, that the leadership is really that great, and that there are some new ways I'm planning on leading in this coming year. I'm going to be doing less, and you're going to be doing more, and that all sounds good to me. So yeah, it was great. And I got to admit, I was a little nervous when it came time for the panel, and then all the people had questions to ask the practitioners, and some of them were kind of spicy as to, you know, what if you always wanted to ask a practitioner? And they're the kinds of questions that I entertain all the time, so I have, you know, a comfort level in addressing all of those questions. But then to watch my practitioners not even squirm as they were sort of fighting for the mics for their turn to answer those questions, I just really can't tell you how, you know, little tear of joy here, because I went to bed feeling very fulfilled, and that's what I want to talk about today. The title of my message is, Nothing is Ever Lost. However, if you get the little newsletter, I write a short blog every week, and then we send out this newsletter to anybody that's interested in staying in close contact with us. You want to know what's going on, that's a quick way to find it. I wrote in my little blog that there really is a longer title for this message. So it's Nothing is Ever Lost Except the Super Bowl. Because the rules of the Super Bowl is, the rules go, that you have to have a winner. So they will play, and they have ways they flip coins and do things, I guess. I'm not a real fan, but I'm not opposed. Don't hate me. I'm not opposed. But they will play till there's a winner, which means there are losers. And so I purposely chose that talk title for this day because, come on, let's face it, there are a lot of football fans right here in this sanctuary. So raise your hand if you're a devoted football fan. Don't be afraid. It's spiritual. All right. All right. Way to go. Way to go. Who are you rooting for?
Packers.
No.
Oh. Eagles? Okay. That's cool. Okay. We got, we the Cowboys. So, you know, I mean, what I want you to see is that if you're a fan, you probably have a team you're rooting for. Anybody here that's a fan that is not rooting for either of those teams? Okay. All right. And so what happens is I just noticed that sometimes people will say, my husband says this sometimes, I just want to see a good game. And you know what? I agree. I just want to see a good game. But you know what that really tells me? Their favorite team didn't make it that far. Because, you know, what we know is, of all sporting events, the football fans, they're kind of the best of all the fans, I think. You know, I mean, they're the guys that, women and men, they're the ones that brave the cold. They don't care. And sometimes they paint their faces or they paint their generous middle sections in the right colors for the team they're rooting for, and they're just great fans. And so my dear friend Reverend Nolly Hartwell reminded me last year at football season that there's this great joke. You've all heard this joke. In fact, it's been told so often that I'm only allowed to tell it on Super Bowl Sunday every other year. So the joke goes like this. There's this very aged gentleman who has fabulous tickets right on the 50-yard line. But he's there sitting in a seat, and next to him is an empty seat. And so the guy on the other side of him is like really curious, and he finally finds a way to begin a conversation with the old guy. And he says, tell me, why is that your seat? And he goes, yes, that's my seat. You know, let me tell you what happened. My wife and I have purchased good seats, and we have been to every Super Bowl for the last 40 years. And we wouldn't have missed a game for any reason. Unfortunately, she passed away recently. And so here I am, and yes, that's my seat. And the guy goes, oh, I'm sorry for your loss. But, you know, you could have got a lot of money for that seat. And in fact, I'll bet you have family members and friends that would love to be sitting there with you right now. And he goes, I know, you're right. They're all at her funeral. You were right. Nolly said that joke wasn't too overtold, that you would still laugh if I told that joke. Nolly, you were right. You were right. So football fans are great, great devoted fans, and that's a fun thing. And so that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about two things. One is the competitive spirit of winning and losing, but the key element of conversation this morning is I want you to leave after this message is complete with a good understanding of a spiritual view of loss. Because I think we have sort of a unique way, a very different way of looking at it. In fact, Reverend Cheryl's not back there, is she? She loves football. See, she's just getting ready right now. She would appreciate this message. Nothing is ever lost. Not even your car keys that you might have been looking for earlier this morning. Right? Not even that cup of coffee. I have such a habit of losing my coffee in the morning. I'm so consistent at that. But isn't it good to know you're not alone, that other people lose things too? In fact, is Judy Baker here today? I'm glad you're here, or otherwise I couldn't talk about you. I would. Last night, Judy Baker lost a whole bowl of chili somewhere in Papke Hall. Did you ever find your chili? Somebody else must have eaten it, huh? So it's nice to have that camaraderie, to know that we're not the only ones that are losing things, but the truth is, your keys are not lost. Your keys always know where they are, just like that morning cup of coffee, right? So I want us to begin the topic this morning by just acknowledging that to be a part of humanity, to be given this great gift of life where we get to live in a human body, body and physical form implies that there will be an experience of loss in our lives. So we not only lose things, but we sort of lose, as we age, we lose our vim and vigor, and we have to work a little harder at staying in good shape. And we all have that experience of life. And I often think, when I consider such things, that just managing a household shows us the reality of how things shift and change and age and need attention. You know, I have chairs in my office here that are getting wobbly legs, and so we're going to have to do something about that. You know, you can see that the building weathers and ages, and things and improvements have to be made. Garbage disposals die yesterday. And so things happen, and then that we put attention to that. And in that experience of noticing that there's this sort of natural deterioration of life, you think we would get it, because every fall, certain trees will lose all their leaves, and every spring those leaves come anew. So we have this great principle of change that's always being demonstrated, and so we can see that loss is normal. We also, some of us are really good at this, look to preserve things. You come of a certain age and you think you're being more reasonable, and you start making rules in your life, like, you know, no food in the living room. I had a girlfriend who you couldn't walk in her living room if you were the guest. I don't know what she saved the formal living room for. You couldn't walk on the rug after she had raked it a certain way so that you couldn't see any vacuum marks. And you couldn't wash your hands in the bathroom sink. You had to come out into the kitchen sink because she couldn't bear that you'd get the bathroom sink dirty. So there are ways we can get obsessive, not only with our stuff, and we start setting rules that are not only, they're not helping us live more comfortably. They ultimately will end up to make it more uncomfortable to live our lives. Sort of like how many of you had a mom that put plastic over the sofa when you're, right? How uncomfortable was that? And yet we did that. That was just like, I love that sitcoms make fun of that stuff. We had a plastic, we got wall-to-wall carpeting for the first time, and my mom and dad put a plastic runner from the kitchen to the back door, you know, to save the rug. And you know what happened? Probably years, I don't know, but eventually you could see how dirty the rug had gotten. Because under the runner that was clear, you could see through, you could see this drastic, I just couldn't live that way. So I want to say that I noticed that we do some of those same things in terms of the experience of the loss of our youth. You know, some of us become obsessed with trying to keep our bodies prevent that aging process, and I really want us to just take a breath and love ourselves enough to recognize that that's just a natural process. It's a blessing to be alive long enough to age and have some aches and pains. So the important part of this message, you know, the information here is really just to offer you a moment to ask yourself, so what is my relationship to loss? How do you relate to loss personally? That's what I want you to think about, and when you leave this morning, to be able to have a good talk with yourself about all of that. Spiritually speaking, they say that when we are feeling any sense of loss, or we are worried about losing something in the future, whether it's, you know, your vigor and vitality or something or someone, spiritually speaking, we say that that's a real clear sign you are not living in the present moment. That when we are worried about something that happened way back there and, oh, maybe it's going to happen again, right? Or, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm going to manage this thing that's going to happen over here. You're not right here. You're not standing in the heart of it. And when you're not standing in the heart of it, you're not being present with life. And I believe that that's why a healthy gratitude practice really benefits us. Because no matter what's going on out there, if we can stop and shift our focus to something, to anything that we can be grateful for in a given moment, now we're going to have a different sense of aliveness or not feeling alive. So when we're so obsessed with all of that other stuff, we can't possibly see what's right in front of us. And that's what's the beautiful gift of spiritual practice, is it has that focus of looking at what's right there. So Ernest Holmes, 100 years ago, he wrote his first book, Creative Mind and Success, and so we are celebrating Centers for Spiritual Living. We are celebrating 100 years of this teaching, of this spiritual philosophy. And I found a great quote I mentioned this last week. In the introduction to that book, Ernest Holmes wrote that, and it's dated October 1st, 1918. He said these words, "The whole world," it's on the front of your program, "the whole world from the least to the greatest must know the truth. Humanity must understand the great laws that govern life. We must learn to control our own destiny, to heal our own body, and to bring happiness to our own soul." And the reason I chose that quote for the front of the program is because my theme for this year is, again, focusing on relevance. How relevant this teaching is simply blows my mind. I'm working on what I'm calling the Relevance Project. I've been working on it for months now at home, and I have this big fold-out foam board that stand in three sections, and I have taped it off so that I have eight areas I'm working on. It frightens me a little bit because it looks like chapters to a book, and I don't really feel that ambitious. But one of the sections that is a theme for my Relevance Project is the staying power of the science of mind, the staying and lasting power of this teaching. So when Holmes speaks about how relevant it was back when he was actually writing it, and in all those years that he wrote and published books, I get thrilled with the ways in which that has not aged. You know, he believed that the Science of Mind textbook, which interestingly, we use it all the time, none of us tire of it, he thought that it would be irrelevant by now, that there would be much better information that would replace that information. But what he didn't acknowledge was that he did a really good job in harvesting these great universal truths from sources of all religious and spiritual traditions. And so Holmes says, now, going back to this idea of loss, Ernest Holmes says that when we're feeling any sense of loss, we're missing the opportunity for the experience of fulfillment. Now, this is becoming sort of a rich idea. When we're feeling any sense of loss, we're not standing in that place and recognizing we could also be feeling fulfilled. Again, think of how when you are truly grateful for something, you feel absolutely filled up. And you can describe that. We would describe that in all different ways because we individualize it in different ways. So, you know, that's what we teach. You can only focus on one thing at a time. So do we want to be stuck in what we can't have or what we used to have? Or would we rather stand in that place of feeling fulfilled in the present moment? And that's what we're looking at. So as I played with all of that, I began to think of the 23rd Psalm. You know, you don't have to ever have gone to a church. You've heard the 23rd Psalm. You've seen it in movies where they do funerals because it's always read at funerals. And I was thinking, the reason I thought of the 23rd Psalm is because it begins by saying, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I shall not want. I shall lack nothing." There are a number of ways we can look at that again. And why? I shall lack nothing because everything I need is freely given. And each and every one of us stands in a relationship to recognizing that truth and using that truth in our own life. When we have a clear awareness of the presence of God right where we are, we absolutely can lack nothing. And this should be of great encouragement. So it's interesting that that we think of the 23rd Psalm only in relation to death. But if we take a step back and we begin to look at all loss, which is why our grief, we grieve over lots of things, not just the loss of people in our lives, but we grieve over some of us grieve over the changing seasons. You know, if you live in a snowy climate, you might be very sad when the leaves start falling, even though it's beautiful. If you don't like shoveling snow or being cold, you could be really sad, and we have, you know, seasonal, whatever that sad is, some disorders. That's it. That's exactly what I was trying to say. Thank you. So this beautiful passage in the Bible reminds us that there is that continuity, that way that life is always shifting and changing and moving, and that sometimes all of us will find ourselves in positions of feeling sort of scared by the movement of life, the changes that are happening in our lives. And in those scary places, God is right there to refresh our souls. That is what this passage is telling us, that no matter how dark the shadows may seem, the light of love, the light of God, the love of God is right there, always, right there to comfort us, to support us, to supply us with that, all those things that we need in remembering that there's more going on than what we see before us. So it's that way then that the passage goes on to say, I shall fear no evil. I shall not fear that darkness, for I know who walks with me. It says, my cup is well filled. So look at how we're looking at fulfillment as the polarity, the opposite of loss. And in spiritual, in doing our spiritual work, whenever we want to get focused, that's what we do. We look at this. This is going on. Then there has to be a spiritual truth, the opposite of it, that can support me right now in the way I'm moving. And then there's that great line that where it says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Now, my husband's mother was named Shirley. And one time, when I was a young newlywed, my sister-in-law said to me that they had to memorize the 23rd Psalm in Sunday school when she was a little girl. And it terrified her because she believed her mom was going to follow her around all the days of her life. True story. Isn't that a great story? I love that story. All right. So I want for you to have an experience of hearing the 23rd Psalm. It's very short. It's only four stanzas. But I want you to hear it in the voice of Eugene Peterson, my favorite, it's my favorite translation. It's not a translation, but I know, honey, I'm getting there. I'm putting a sentence together. Give me a break. Mark, take a breath and exhale. Eugene Peterson was, you know, or is a Baptist, a fundamental Baptist minister that loved the Bible, and he recognized that people were not understanding the fullness and the beauty of the Bible, so he paraphrased it. He dared to, and a lot of people don't like it because of that. So, but it's very contemporary, and so I want you to hear it in the favorite voice of my choosing. God, my shepherd, I don't need a thing. You have bedded me down in lush meadows, and you find me in quiet pools to drink from. True to your word, you let me catch my breath and you send me in the right direction. Even when the way goes through Death Valley, I am not afraid. When you walk at my side, your trusty shepherd's crook makes me feel secure. You serve me a six-course dinner right in front of my enemies and you receive my drooping head. My cup brims with blessing. Your beauty and love chase after me every day of my life. This is a promise. These words are so gorgeous, and I think it's really okay to have your favorite version, but isn't it wonderful when we can open our minds to hear a deeper meaning of what's being said here? Because what the psalmist is saying, if you look at it in a contemporary language, is that as long as we keep our thoughts, as long as we keep our minds focused on God, as long as we open ourselves to God thoughts, to spiritual matters, then all is well. All is well. And it's not special. Anyone who awakes to the presence of God can have that experience of that wonderful moment. In the Science of Mind textbook, and I'm going to, I don't do this all the time, but I like to nag you sometimes, it's fun. On page 463, now I'm going to watch and see who writes this down. On page 463, pretend you're writing it down. It will make me feel, oh good, much better. Oh, I was getting worried. No, the reason I'm joking about it is because I want you to remember 463 so that you can go home and you can look it up. Or you can stop in the bookstore. I have a free copy out there, the bookstore copy, and I would love you to read around the context of this quote I'm about to tell you. Because Ernest Holmes has something to say about why we have experiences of wanting and needing and feeling like we don't have enough. It's actually in a topic where the subheading is Why We Are in Want. Page. I knew you had that. He says, when we separate ourselves from the divine fire, here's the part that you guys sang about that made me so excited. When we separate ourselves from the divine fire, that would be the master flame, spirit itself. When we become an isolated spark. You know, sometimes we speak, and especially in metaphysics, we use a lot of metaphors or symbols. We're fond of that, as was Jesus. We talk about that little flame that we all have, and that flame can never be put out because it's the divine flame. But when we come together, we are having that experience of oneness that, oh my goodness, that song you chose to do on oneness where you're all harmonizing and you get that flavor, that feeling, you are part of that oneness. Gosh, you guys do that so beautifully. So when we come together, you can see in the same way that their harmony makes it unbelievably beautiful, right? You can have one exquisite voice, but you put them together and they know how to harmonize together. Now we're talking about that big divine flame. So you can, when you separate yourself from the divine fire, you become an isolated spark. And we are strong only when we are united with life. As soon as our consciousness is detached from spiritual wholeness, we can no longer draw from that inexhaustible reservoir of eternal existence. So we become exhausted. When we separate ourselves from that whole, sometimes it feels like somebody else pulled you away, but we are always at choice as to whether or not we are having that experience of oneness. But as our consciousness, our conscious thinking mind, as our consciousness is detached from that experience of wholeness, then we can no longer tap into that inexhaustible flow of life, and therefore we do feel drained and exhausted. There is nothing to fall back upon. And then he uses all capital letters to write that last sentence, and he says this. So he's making this important. It is impossible for humankind to feel separated from the spirit without feeling lost and in want. So when we are in that place of not feeling like we have enough, that is such a beautiful compass redirecting us to connect again to the truth, to take our little spark, our little flame, and to put it into to that another flame where it becomes a brighter experience, a more powerful experience that fuels us in a better way. It's loss or fulfillment. Where do we want to be? And I wanted to make a side point at right now that for me defines the difference between wanting and needing, or being alert to the divine desire. Because we talk a lot about you can have the good that you want in your life, right? We talk about that. We're very comfortable having conversations that we're entitled to health and we're entitled to be comfortable and we're entitled to joy. You know, we're entitled to love because we are created in the image and likeness of God, and therefore it is Spirit's desire for us to have that experience of those things. And so when we desire those things, and we can look at them as qualities and not just individual, like not more stuff. It's not about acquisition. So it's different than wanting or needing or feeling like you're losing something, as opposed to knowing that the God-given desires are there to be fulfilled because Spirit desires for us to have that experience of fulfillment. So nothing is ever lost. Except the Super Bowl, of course. I also wanted to mention that idea of the spirit of competition, because it is Super Bowl day, you know, because there will be two teams on the field really wanting to win the game today, and there are a lot of fans that are going to be invested in that. As I looked at that idea of competition, I found that the word compete has a Latin root that surprised me, and it may surprise you too. The word compete means to aim or seek together. To aim or seek together. So when I look at the way we use the word competing, as in sporting events, the Winter Olympics will be starting soon. So there's all this way people are competing, and what does that competition do? Let's use the Olympics as an example. It gives you a way, you know, a runner runs and the time is marked, then the next time that runner runs, what does he or she want? They want to do better. I mean, where's it going to end? It scares me sometimes. We're going to go backwards? I don't know. They want to do better, and that's the same thing that we see in sporting events. That way that people seek to come together creates an edge that can bring us to a greater experience of excellence. We can do better when we hedge each other on, so to speak. So have you ever stood over somebody's shoulder or had somebody stand over your shoulder while you're at the computer? And they go, well, why do you do it that way? I always go in, I always do that. Oh, no, go do this, do it this way. It's, or so we are always learning new things, right? So though it may appear like, why do I got to do it her way? I'm really happy doing it my way. Maybe there are still some things that we can learn. And so if we look at the original meaning of the word competition, it changes a whole lot. And I can see some spiritual truth here. I can see some spiritual guidance just in, do you know, it's fun to watch how words change. I have a website I always go to look at origins, and they show a little map with a graph on it as to how much frequency a certain word was used and whether it has used more or less through the years. it's just interesting to see how we move away from what words mean, but when we come to the soul of the word, we get greater meaning, and often in spirituality, that's really helpful. Now, here's what I want to say. A lot of people are going to go to the, where is the Super Bowl this year? That does not sound fun. Is it closed? Is it enclosed? Oh, okay. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. They can drink their beer and paint their bellies. It'll be okay. What draws someone to want to be there? Mark, have you been to the Super Bowl before? No? Anybody here been to the Super Bowl before? Wow. That is a real fan. I'm telling you. She is a truly... Who played the year you saw the Super Bowl? Wow, nice. It's negative 1 degree in Minnesota right now. Oh, yay, yay. So I want you to think about this for a minute. It is a big deal. It's hard to get tickets to the Super Bowl, and they're very pricey. And it's a great event in terms of being televised. I was at the supermarket the other day, and I heard somebody say, remember, you all have to work on Sunday. So it's a good day for the grocery store, too, apparently. What I would say is, if we look at that word compete, that we aim or seek to be together, everybody sitting in that arena for the Super Bowl game today aims or seeks to be together because they are fans of the sport, number one, or they know that it's a great privilege to be there and they got dragged along with somebody else, right? So there's something there where they seek to be together, but then what happens? You get a subgroup. Right? Ooh, two teams are going to be duking it out down there on the field, right? And you got half the crowd rooting for this team and half the other half of the crowd rooting for that team. Now, what I want you to notice is merely by choosing a team, you have aimed or sought to find community to join together yet again. So you now have a subculture below that greater culture. And I would say that I think that's the way life is. And it doesn't have to be a good thing or a bad thing. Did you see the comic strip on Sue's birthday is Groundhog Day? And sorry, I can't help it. I'm such a bad friend. I don't ever send birthday cards or remember. So there, I just acknowledge your birthday. Am I on your good list again?
No, you're on my good list anyway.
Okay. So on Groundhog Day, there was a cartoon in the paper. It was really cute, only 3 frames, and it was a groundhog. So here's this little groundhog popped out of his hole, and he's looking all forlorn. He goes, "Oh, some of the people want me to see my shadow." And then the next panel, "Oh, and other people don't want me to see my shadow." And then in the final third square, he goes, "Oh, we live in such divisive times." And, you know, I just loved it. I was in the middle of writing the talk already, and I went, that says it. That's what I want to speak to. That's what I want to say at the end of the talk for you to be able to take home with you and remember. Because, you see, comedians have this marvelous way of bringing some levity to some serious things. So it is not to say that there's not a lot of ugly stuff going on in the world, but it's not my job to stand up. You wouldn't come to church if that's what I wanted to talk about anyhow, right? Because we come to a Sunday service so that we can feel good, so that we can remember principles, so that we have something to chew on later during the week and keep us kind of fresh and inspired. So yes, the world is pretty doggone divided, and there are a lot of things to worry about, but here's what I want to say. No matter how bad it gets, we have spiritual principle to draw us back to our center, to ground us again, to be that where we can say, I will fear no evil because I know there is this greater truth going on. We can stand in that bigger fire so that we can feel our own flame being fanned and ignited into something more. And so for my life, I am determined. I want to focus on fulfillment and not loss. And I shall not separate myself from the divine fire. And I know that I am strong in the Lord and the power of his might. I love that scripture. I'm always looking for an excuse to say that I am and powerful up here. I'm strong in the Lord and the power of his might. I know that I'm more than a tiny isolated spark, even when I don't feel very strong. And I think the really important thing here is that this is what the master teacher Jesus tried to show all of us. This is why I love thinking of Jesus as the elder brother, because it's like the big brother comes and gives you all his wisdom. See, Jesus knew, Jesus said that he could do nothing of himself, but he could work only as the currents of divinity worked through him, as he felt that energy of God moving through him. And as that is true for Jesus, that is true for us. When we remember it is not us, we ourselves, that have to be so powerful, we only have to remember to open ourselves to stand in the current of life, to remember there is that greater power that is for us, not against us. So at my house this afternoon, I'm pretty sure we will have the Super Bowl on TV. And I'll probably have a good book on my lap. I'll be sitting next to my honey, and I'll have a good book on my lap. But I will watch parts of the game. First of all, I think the commercials are really worth it. And you never know about that halftime. You know, that could, sometimes that could be pretty entertaining. But here's what I was thinking, is that even when I sit on the sofa with a book or a magazine or something, every now and then, maybe it's because Hugh will get excited, but I'll look up, and even me, a non-fan, and I will see some perfect play, a throw perhaps. You know, it's so amazing how they can spin that awkward ball. And I'm going to see some great throws. And you know we're going to see some great receiving. You know, they're going to catch some great throws. And you know that there'll be some interceptions, right? Isn't it exciting when something's intercepted? Sometimes you like it. Sometimes it's horrible when that happens. But that happens. And then there's always this one little guy that looks little and runty compared to everybody else, and he gets a ball under his arm, and then he runs down the field, and he weaves in and out of all these gladiators, you know, and all this opposition, and it doesn't frighten him. And we know there will be some points on the scoreboard, because the game ain't over till there's points on the scoreboard. We also know that we will witness some fumbles. We also know that the refs are probably going to make some bad calls in addition to some good calls. And the more I looked at it like this, the more I dissected it, I began to see this is life. Sometimes we fumble, sometimes we make the perfect throw, sometimes we catch something beautifully that somebody sent to us, and sometimes somebody jumps in front and intercepts what we think was ours. It's just life. And when it's all said and done, there are, at least in the Super Bowl, winners and losers. But I want you to not miss this point. The crowds are there, and we are fans, if you are a fan of football, because we aim or seek to be together. So there are fans that go to the stadium. There are teams that we support. We enjoy sharing those experiences side by side. And even in choosing the team that you want to support, except for Sue Ann, who can't help it. She's got it in her blood. But even as we choose the teams we desire to root for, we are creating community. Right? And so for thousands of years, people have done this with sports and with lots of other things. And what I hope that we can practice, we can use this Super Bowl theme, is that we can practice seeing that often what looks divisive, where it appears that there are two sides against each other, that there is more going on, that they have chosen to be together before they chose to be against. And so as I think about that idea, and I think that there are people, there are if we're going to do like the yin and the yang, there are black and there are white people, and sometimes it appears they are against each other. There are those who have, and then there are what we call the have-nots, and sometimes they seem opposed to each other. There are religions who believe they have the only true religion, and very often it appears that they are opposed to each other. There are liberals and there are conservatives, and there are people who like Brussels sprouts, and there are people who do not like Brussels sprouts. But all of us are part of a greater whole because we have an instinct to aim to be together. I stand in this truth. I know it as my life, and I hope you will think about it this week. Now, in order to anchor the words that we have spoken, I would like to first call forward the practitioners so that we might embody the congregation at this time of prayer. So just get comfortable where you're seated. Take a nice deep breath. And simply feel the movement in this room, given a new perspective on loss and competition, knowing there's this gem of truth that will enhance our personal journey. I feel the love of God in this sanctuary. I know that it is the way we have come together in community. And I recognize that love as a movement and activity within. It is the truth of each being, of every living thing, that this activity of spirit itself is that which sustains us and guides us. And I know that it is right here, right now, it is in this very room. I feel the love of God within me. And as it appears to be a quickening and awakening and awareness that all the truth that we need to guide us on our individualized journey, all the truth is already given. And so as we embody the way in which we are all connected, the oneness of life, we recognize that we are part of a greater whole. I simply rejoice in that gift that also allows us to individually express divine truth. And so knowing that Spirit shows up and moves through us and expresses as us in the way that we share our love with each other, in the way that we communicate and exchange words and ideas, in the way that we join in community, that these are the life-enhancing gifts of the Father. And so I know that we shall not want. For in the way that we join, we remind each other that perfection is right where we are. And so wherever there is any appearance of disharmony, of a strained relationship, love gone wrong, we open our hearts to understand this expanded opportunity to know forgiveness, to divinely accept the truth that all are called, that we are all children of the divine, that we are indeed created in the image and the likeness of that which has created us, and that God has loved us so much that we have been kissed with the breath of life to live this experience. And so I know that any appearance of loss, of limitation, of not enough, of wanting or need, that these appearances are replaced with the fullness, because the givingness of God, the grace of God is pouring into our lives, into this spiritual community, that nothing can block the way of the good of God, and so we simply open ourselves to receive. I say, thank you, God. Thank you, God. I am so grateful. How good it is to know that everything we need is given. And so in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, that knowing of perfect healing in every way as we are restored to our wholeness, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always responds affirmatively. I let it be, and together we say, and so it is. Amen, amen.